Welcome back to another tale of cosmic horror and unimaginable terrors that wrought our universe. Where last time we went through the tides of those from the great beyond, today we will be exploring the Call of Cthulhu solo adventure titled Alone Against the Flames. I'm looking forward to this one. Alone Against the Flames, a solo adventure for the Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition Rules, by Gavin Inglis. Cover by Peter Stovic. The sun is high in the sky, a merciless ball of heat. You feel scorched by the time you reach the bus halt in front of Osborne's drugstore. It's a relief to put down your heavy cases and take off your hat for a moment. You fan your face. It has been a long summer here in your hometown, and yet, a curiously empty one. You look across the street at the grubby butcher shop, the grocer's with its faded awning, and the shabby tobacconist. Mistrustful faces glare at you as they pass, eyeing your clothes and luggage. It was your parents' choice to live here, not yours. You were happy down south as a child, among Providence's white-walled houses and leafy churchyards. Perhaps this new job in Arkham will supply the change that you need. Yet everybody you know in the world lives here. You know nobody in Arkham. Not one soul. You ask yourself one last time if you are doing the right thing. The answer is here. None of your supposed friends have come to see you off. You are alone. Whatever challenges lie in Arkham, it will be a new life, a brave one. You notice a small gray coach approaching, and it rattles to a stop. You put your hat back on and pick up your cases. Two young men with sullen expressions alight from the coach. One looks you up and down before heading away. The driver also steps down, glancing at you before crossing the road to visit the tobacconist. When he returns, he is rolling a cigarette between his yellowed fingers. He gives it a final twist and examines you as he reaches for his matchbox. He's a thin man in his 50s, dressed in a stained shirt with the bus company emblem. Yet his eyes are sharp in their dark sockets.
Where to?
You show him your ticket for Ossipee. From there, you will connect to Rochester and Portsmouth, before the coastal line to Newburyport, and finally, Arkham. You should be able to afford the rail ticket for at least some of the way. Otherwise, this will be the first of many long bus trips. The driver scratches the match and lights his cigarette. The end flares as he takes a draw. Then he exhales and gestures to the back of the coach. Luggage racks up there. The driver smokes and watches as you drag your cases to the back of the motor coach. The rack is set inconveniently high on the vehicle. You get a grip on the heavier case. You struggle, trying to heft it up on top of the motor coach. Hey, driver, you mind helping here a bit? The driver takes one last drag on his cigarette before tossing it on the ground and stamping it out. He approaches and assists you in loading up your bags.
Heavy bags for a small one, he remarks.
You judge it best to respond with a simple thanks. The driver rolls and lights another cigarette as he steps into the motor coach. He turns over its engine, which coughs into life. You board, grateful you'll be the only passenger, at least for the initial part of your trip. With mixed emotions, you watch from the window as the tired avenues of your old home slip behind you, receding into the distance. For a few minutes, you can still see the church spire over the brow of a low hill. Then the road dips, and it too is gone. Arkham is your new home. You will travel there and make a new start. The coach putters through the countryside. At first, the interior is stifling and your stomach lurches with every bend in the road.
However, a driver opens his window, and by switching seats, you find a spot where the breeze hits your face. You soon relax into the journey, observing the quaint little hamlets that the coach serves. A heavy-set woman boards at one settlement and gives you a polite nod. She gets off at the next one. The road rises a little, passing cornfields and orchards. The leaves are turning and the trees are alive with glorious reds and golds. You have just begun to doze when the driver takes a tight bend at speed.
Ah, damn!
You hear the driver give a desperate yell, awakening you. You feel yourself slide from the seat as the driver spins the wheel and the motor coach plunges off the road. Too late. You reach for the seat in front. You fall into the aisle and your ribs crash against the edge of the seat opposite. Your breath rushes out of you, and the coach stops with a thump. Your driver leaps from his seat into the road. As you sprawl dizzy in the aisle, you hear a string of incendiary curses.
Goddamn local farmers parking on the road. Could have killed us.
The driver climbs back into the cab and sees you on the floor. He looks concerned and assists you back to your seat. You see what has happened now. A Fordson tractor has stopped in the road and he had to swerve to avoid the steel obstacle.
Sorry.
All them fields, and he has to pick the damned road to park. You alright? You don't think anything's broken, but you'll have a colorful bruise for the next few days. He backs the coach up a little and threads it around the tractor, glaring at the farmer. You resume your journey. The driver takes the curves with more caution than before. He glances over his shoulder at you a couple of times.
Sorry about before. That fellow was dumber than a hog. I'm Silas. What's your name?
The accident was at least as much Silas's fault as the farmer's, but it doesn't seem shrewd to antagonize the man while he's driving you through the middle of nowhere.
My name is Bertrand. Pleasure to meet you.
The coach turns onto a narrower road, which weaves uphill through the woodland. Silas becomes chatty.
Going to Arkham, eh?
Can't say I ever heard of the place. Went to Boston once. Didn't like it. Too much hustle and bustle.
Got family there? Special someone waiting?
No, I'm actually taking a professorship there at the university. Figured that this was my one chance to put my miserly life behind me and make something of myself. The afternoon is wearing on. You see no harm in confiding in Silas about your new life.
A job, eh? That's a fair thing for you.
Yeah, like I was saying, it's only a junior position, so it's mostly tutoring duties and things like that. But I figure it's a foot in the door and it's a well-regarded institution. And who knows, it might lead to bigger and better things. A symposium, a visiting lecture, even one of its world-spanning expeditions. That'd be super fun. Silas wrinkles his nose. I had enough of book learning when I was a youngin'. Still, I suppose it's well enough for those who likes it. You realize Silas hasn't made a stop since the incident with the tractor. The motor coach winds its way uphill. However, your thoughts are interrupted as the road crests a ridge and you are treated to a magnificent view of the vista below. A creek snakes through the valley, breaking the rich autumn palette of the tree line. In the distance, the White Mountains rise into hazy cloud. There is no settlement, not even a cabin, as far as the eye can see. Birds drift through the treetops, and you can just make out what might be two white-tailed deer lingering by the water. Perhaps you're making a mistake by moving to the city. Could you survive on your own in this lush wilderness? The motor coach rattles on through the hills, and Silas lapses into silence. The sky darkens behind you, pinks tinting the clouds as the sun descends. Finally,
a welcome sight comes into view. A settlement on the crest of a hill. This doesn't look like the pictures you've seen of Ossipee, but perhaps you can persuade Silas to stop while you stretch your legs.
Hey, Silas, mind if we take a stop so I can stretch, you know? Get the blood flowing?
Minutes later, a harsh stuttering from the engine interrupts your reverie. Silas frowns and rattles the gear stick. The motor coach falters in its ascent. Silas utters a curse you don't recognize and grinds his teeth, struggling at the wheel. You seem to inch up the hill until you reach the first building, low dwellings constructed from a rough red stone. Silas wrestles the coach into a small bay off the road. He scrambles from his seat and makes for the engine compartment. You get the sense of a falseness, however, to Silas's actions. He seems to be acting. Either he's not as aggravated about the breakdown as his behavior suggests, or perhaps the breakdown itself is an act. This is a ruse to make you spend your time and money in a local shop. He'll be sadly disappointed in your purchasing power. Silas opens the engine compartment and sticks his head inside. The hot metal pops and sizzles. He pokes at various components, then withdraws and wipes his brow, smearing it with dark grease.
I ain't sure what's wrong. Might be the oil pressure. Might be something knocked off Kilton who took that spill. Can't do much until the engine cools neither. And with the light failing, I reckon we'll be here through the night.
He wipes his hands on a rag. The shadows from your surroundings are already long, and the air is chilly. You feel stiff from the journey, and a night in the rickety coach sounds unappealing. Silas sees your dismay.
I mean, there's Emberhead, miles from any place. I only come through twice a week. The folks here are good people.
May Ledbetter, she keeps a spare room. She'll look after you. Go up the alley, turn right. First house on the left. He scratches his cheek, looks again into the engine compartment, and spits on the ground.
Meet me back here at 8 in the morning, and we'll see how's we stand.
With your limited car knowledge, and given the events of today, you find it best to take his advice, and you begin making way in the direction of May Ledbetter's house. You drag your cases between the sullen buildings. You feel surprisingly weary, considering you have spent all day sitting down. Silas's descriptions led you to a modest dwelling with a slate roof, and a nameplate reads Ledbetter, and underneath, a sign in neat copperplate reads Lodging Room. The lane around you is gloomy, but a lamp flickers in the window. A breeze chills your face. You're not about to begin your new life by sleeping in the street. You rap on the weather-beaten door. After a moment, you hear footsteps inside the house. A bolt is drawn back, and the wooden door swings open. A figure with loose curls and a rough-looking house dress appears at you. Her gaze takes in the traveling suit in your cases. Her voice has a slight Irish lilt.
Hello. Shall I take you as you're looking for a room for the night?
Yes. Pardon the intrusion, ma'am. I know it is late, but our motor coach broke down a few miles back, and I was recommended your place for lodging by a Silas.
What are your costs for a night of staying here?
You are not overly impressed by the rates, nor the abode. But as far as you've seen, the village does not offer many alternatives.
Oh, you'll find them very reasonable. You look tired. I'm May. Come inside and we'll talk over a cup of tea.
The Ledbetter house feels cramped, with a low ceiling and simple fittings, but is well kept, and a cheerful fire crackles in the grate. The aroma of the tea is soothing, and the cup warms your fingers.
Have you come to Emberhead for the festival? She asks.
No, ma'am. I truthfully didn't know that there was a festival. Like I said, we were on our way through the hills and the coach broke down. Silas said that we had to wait until morning to see what's really wrong with it,
and he recommended that I come here and speak with you about lodging.
May shakes her head, and you glimpse a moment of deep-seated anger in her green eyes.
He always drives too fast. Thinks the road is made for him and him alone.
He hit a mare some years back. That was a terrible thing. You should have seen the state of the coach. You'd be surprised at the damage done.
She sips her tea and gazes past you into the corner of the room.
With living here, though, we can't afford to antagonize the man. He's about the only link we have to the world at large. And he's not a bad soul at heart. I suppose that going the same route for 15 years makes a man careless. You have to forgive him.
May goes silent for a long time. Then her eyes flick back to you.
But you didn't come here to listen to me blather, and you must be hungry. I can rustle you up a bit of stew. How would that be?
That would be greatly appreciated, ma'am. I am quite hungry, and I do appreciate the tea. And again, I don't mean to be rude or impose, but we haven't discussed rates.
May names a price, so low you accept it without hesitation. The room is small but comfortable, and the stew dark and hearty. After dinner, you have a couple of hours before your usual bedtime. You decide to talk to May a little bit about life in Emberhead.
In her letters, my sister always asks if I'm not bored. Living in such a small place, she lives in New York, you know. Then she writes about how frightened she is to walk home at night. I ask you, what kind of way is that to live?
You mention your hopes for a new life in Arkham. May doesn't seem to hear you.
It's a small place here, yes, but that means we have real community. Everybody's face is known, everybody works together, nobody's excluded. Except those who choose to exclude themselves, of course. I couldn't live anywhere else but here.
As the hours wear on, you are amused to hear May transform into a sort of tired tourist guide.
Of course, the views from here are spectacular on a good day. A clear view all the way around. If you're a painter, you'll be right at home. If your tastes run more to the artisan, there are workshops on Silbury Street, just at the end here, and turn right. They're not set up for visitors, you understand, but you'll see the real craftsmen at work, the genuine article. Now, if you're looking for freshly baked bread.
It seems a shame to point out that you intend to be on the road again shortly. You let May continue until she begins to yawn.
Would you listen to me yapping? Time to turn in. When would you like your breakfast?
Well, seeing as I'm supposed to meet Silas back at the coach at 8, how about 6 a.m.? Does that work?
I think we can make 6 a.m. work for you, dear.
As May stands, you hear a clunk behind you. You look over your shoulder, but all you can see is a wooden door, securely closed.
The young lady of the house should have been listening to us. Ruth, come and greet our guest.
There's a short pause. Then the door creaks open. Two wide eyes peer at you from the gap between tousled hair and a rough nightgown.
What do you say?
The eyes blink.
Pleased to meet you. Now get back to bed.
The door closes again.
My daughter Ruth, 10 years this summer. Grow up so fast. She's a delight and a torment all in one, don't get me wrong.
But don't worry, she sleeps in with me. She'll not disturb you.
Good night.
You retire to your room. It's a little chilly, but you are too tired to worry about lighting the fire. You see that the sheets are clean, and the bed soon warms up. The silence outside is strange after living in a town for so long, and it makes it a little hard to drift off to sleep. Being a little restless, you rise again from the bed and make your way out to explore the nearby village of Emberhead. You carefully and quietly open the door to May Ledbetter's home and step out into the night. Emberhead lies ahead of you. You notice a map on a board outside of one of the nearby buildings, and you take a look. And in the moonlight, you can see that Emberhead is a very
cliffy and dangerous place. And looking around, you can confirm that for yourself. You notice that the sky is overcast, and only a few glimmers of moonlight peek from the clouds, intermittently shining out of the ground and the nearby board. So it's a good thing that you borrowed May Ledbetter's lantern. Otherwise, you'd be in near total darkness. You cannot hope to get a full overview of the village tonight, but you decide that anything is better than nothing. May's Street is a narrow passage, hemmed in by squat, dark dwellings. At the end, however, it opens up. A wide thoroughfare leads off to your right. A crude sign names it Silbury Street. To the left, a few yards away, your light picks up the crooked posts of a simple fence, and beyond that, the ground drops away into darkness. You take a couple steps closer, but you can see nothing. Air from below cools your face. Then some instinct makes you turn around. An ink-black figure stands in the road, about 20 yards behind you. It stares at you. You form the sudden impression that it will run at you and throw you over the cliff edge. This is unsettling. Seeing it has been spotted, the figure slips down an alley. What the hell was that? You ask yourself, as you are now faced with the decision whether to return to the Ledbetter house and or continue exploring, or to the lesser side of your judgment, confront this dark figure. Choosing the not-so-wise option, perhaps, you approach the figure, and they take a pace back, and then another, and it slips down an alley between two buildings. The figure moves fast, with almost silent steps, but your instincts keep you on its tail. It slips through a dusty courtyard, veering off between iron fences. You close in as it darts around a corner. A breeze warns that you are close to a cliff edge. The flickering light from your lantern picks up its grassy lip as you charge in pursuit. You slow your pace, watching for unexpected voids beneath you. The watcher pulls further away, but rather than darting back into the maze of streets, it makes for the cliff edge. You close in. The dark figure swings its head to stare at you once more. You receive a brief, uneasy impression of something wrong with its face. Then it leaps over the cliff edge. Your mouth drops open. You approach the edge, lantern swinging in the wind. Dim light plays on the rock face beneath you. Did you frighten somebody into suicide? Your gut says not, but you cannot explain what just happened. You find your way back to the Ledbetter house, the lantern trembling in your grasp. And fatigue and drowsiness finally works its way into your mind as you lay down to a night's sleep. You dream of fire in the grate, coruscating colors shimmering through the dancing tongues of flame. At first, they are tiny, almost microscopic, but they grow and grow until a kaleidoscope inferno spills from the fireplace, spreading across the floor, up the sheets. You wake with a start. Daylight glints through the curtains. You get up and examine the grate, blinking the sleep from your eyes. It is quite cold. It appears that May has no running water, but has supplied some in a ceramic jug. You freshen up at the washstand and go in. She cooks a hearty breakfast and leaves you in peace to eat. At about 7:30, you are paid up, packed, and ready to go. You bid May goodbye, and she wishes you the best for your new career in Arkham. As you exit May Ledbetter's home, you take a look at your pocket watch.
and notice that you do have some time before you have to meet up with Silas. And curiosity getting the better of you, you decide to go take a little stroll around that cliffside where the shadowy, inky figure jumped last night. You retrace your steps of last night. A few villagers watch with polite curiosity as you tread your way through along the northern cliffs, bags in tow. In time, you think you have found the spot. Heart thudding in your chest, you peer over the edge. Nothing. Curiously, nothing. With the benefit of daylight, you see the cliff is not the bottomless drop you imagined. It leads to a shelf some 20 yards below. It could still be a lethal tumble, but you see no body, no blood. Looking closer, your keen eyes pick it up after a couple of minutes of scanning the cliff face, that there are a series of protruding rocks combined with what looks like man-made incisions. The effect is an ingenious hidden stairway that leads down the cliff. No doubt, the dark figure uses this to descend safely. You look along the lower shelf. You see only a few drab shacks off to your right. This might have been an interesting find, were you not about to leave Emberhead for good. You are already tired of your heavy bags. Hopefully Silas has repaired the motor coach and you can resume your long journey. A sour puss he might be, but the old driver seemed to understand his vehicle well enough. You pause to check your watch, still 20 minutes early, and around the final corner, the motor coach is gone.
But how could it be gone? I'm still 20 minutes early. He said to meet at 8.
You put your bags down and search the area, trekking up and down slopes and around corners. At the edge of the village, you trace the long road back as it winds across the hills. 8 o'clock comes and goes. There is no coach to be seen. A passing villager notices your bags.
Are you looking for the bus? I heard him take off at first light. He's due back in 3 or 4 days. If you need a place to stay, May Ledbetter rents a room.
The man raises his hat to you and strolls on into the village. That son of a bitch. He must have set me up. But why? Why did he leave without me? It's very curious. You curse Silas under your breath. Perhaps he went for parts. But you wonder if the old goat has stranded you here on purpose.
Join us soon in Chapter 2. As our hero has to deal with and come to terms with being abandoned in a strange and alien little village in the middle of nowhere.